our summer day. Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Cogan. You're going to be hearing much of the night on a two-hour show, a rare wintertime two-hour show. The voice of Petra Van Noyes and her husband, Andy Brown. She sings, he plays the guitar. The newest CD is less than lyrical, and I'll tell you more about it. This city has a lot of people who are kind of under the radar, who we should know about, but they have not achieved the level of cheap celebrity that so many people find in this city. One of those people is my first guest, Stan Champion. You are a remarkable guy. We have never met face-to-face, but I have been hearing about you for roughly 30 years, and the kind of work you're doing, not only on the radio, not only with your music, but also as a community activist and a community uplifter. So it is my unbelievable pleasure to welcome you to the show. How are you, Stan?
Oh, I'm pretty well today, and thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate that.
Well, you have a fascinating, fascinating background, and one of these days soon, and all you people look for, because there certainly will be a tribune in the year 2018, a story by me about this fellow. Because you've had a fascinating life. You were born in Pittsburgh, but you came to Chicago as a young man, yes?
Yes, exactly. My dad was in the Air Force, and we were living in Moses Lake, Washington, and that's where I was starting to go to school, and my brother was born out there. And then my parents separated around that time, and we ended up coming to where my folks had moved from Pittsburgh to Chicago.
What neighborhood did you first move into, Stan?
It was over on the west side, over there on Warren in California.
Mm-hmm. And you were drawn from a very, very young age, not only to music, but at the same time to the visual arts, weren't you? How did that happen? Because in some neighborhoods, you know, as you know better than anybody, in some neighborhoods in Chicago, young people are not given the opportunity to explore the arts in the way they might have been 70 years ago,
indeed, I was lucky in that way, but, you know, I was having a problem in school because of the separation of my parents, who I loved very much.
Sure.
And that it was just my escape. I could have gone one route or the other, but this was my way out to, you know, first sit down and start sketching and just using my imagination in that way. And I've always wanted to play the guitar because I've always liked the sound, but I never had a chance to have one, until later.
Well, you got your first guitar at 13, though, didn't you?
Right, exactly.
And the great thing about you, from what little I know about you, that's why I'm so excited to talk to you, your influences were very wide. Your influences were like Chuck Berry, Wes Montgomery, The Beatles, Bo Diddley, Albert King. Obviously, you were a kid that was open to any kind of music, weren't you?
It was because my mom, and actually, my uncle used to be the engineer for Sid McCoy's show, and he would be giving her all these promotional records, and that's what I was hearing in the house.
Wow!
It was such a great experience, and we listened to everything because she listened to everything, you know, all kinds of stuff, and that's what happened.
Stan Champion, do you remember the first song you learned to play on the guitar that you felt good enough about and said, oh my goodness, I can actually play a song? What variety of music was it? Do you remember?
Well, you know, I had a friend of my sister's that saw my guitar and said, hey, I can play this song. And it was just like a blues, Muddy Waters blues song. And he showed that to me. So the first thing was a little Muddy Waters blues.
That's an awfully, awfully nice place to start. My guest is Stan Champion. He's got a great, great website called Roots Rock Society. That's R-O-O. I'm not going to spell it for you. You people are smart. RootsRockSociety.com. It's a great website that'll let you hear some of his music. Then it seemed, Stan, and tell me I'm wrong, it seemed that visual art sort of predominated in your life for a while. You may have been playing the guitar with some seriousness, but you were driven by the visual arts for a while in your teenage years, yes?
Well, yes. I had a teacher in fifth grade who supposedly discovered me, and she sent me to the Art Institute Junior School. So
wow.
It started with the visual.
Yeah.
It started with that. And then from there, I had got a couple of honorable mentions, and I almost got a scholarship to the University of Chicago, which was taking all the general studies for the Art Institute at the time.
Wow.
And I have a piece now that's in the Smithsonian Institute from something I did at the Art Institute. So I've got a lot of exposure from them for a child for, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. And that was the first thing that started. I would get awards from the boys' club, you know, when I went to camp, you know, crafts and art, and I won awards. I've always won some kind of award one way or the other just from doing stuff. Stuff would disappear, and I said, well, what happened to that piece I did?
It's in a collection somewhere. It's in a collection. Yeah. So let me ask you, so, I mean, getting that those kind of accolades, you must have at that point thought to yourself, well, wait, maybe I can actually, maybe this is if people like it so much and I'm getting awards and people are putting it in various collections, that maybe I can actually make a career out of this. Did you think that?
Well, you know, not at first, because, you know, my mom bought me my first guitar, but she hated the fact that I played it. I think she thought maybe I was going to focus just on music, but in our house, we had to get our education, our degrees and all that.
Yeah.
That was a must.
Yeah.
And I figured I could, you know, I could still play. You know, it's funny, she hated the fact that I played it, but when company came over, I was the one she had, go get your guitar and pull it out.
It's a classic mixed feelings from a mom.
When you went to
college, did you go to get an art degree then?
Well, not at first. You know, I didn't know really what I wanted to do. I knew I had to go to school, but I didn't know what I really wanted to do. And I went into the art part, only in the commercial part of it, because I worked on Michigan Avenue, you know, back in the day. That's where it all started. I would work that in the day and then play music at night. And it was great because advertising and music kind of works together. You know, I was getting tickets to some great shows to see some great entertainers in town. I was even doing some entertainment stuff for the agency I worked for.
Mm.
So it kind of worked out. One thing led to another. But when I was going to college, they started to specialize after a while in the business of music or the business of art, the creative arts, where we think in terms of publishing and starting infrastructure, and that's what really changed my life, because then I saw arts was more than just someone just wanted to just paint pictures, but something that you could have some kind of infrastructure. You have to be a butcher, baker, or candlestick maker.
Yeah,
so
wonderful thing about you, Stan Champion, is that you have used your art and your music in a sort of activist role and to help change society. I want to explore that. We got to take a short commercial break. I'm on with Stan Champion about who I will be writing a story early in 2018. Go to, if you want to know more about him, rootsrocksociety.com. It's a great website. But I have to tell you this, play ball, celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today and stay tuned. We'll be back.
Save your sorrow for tomorrow. Smile.
That's a great voice of Petra Van Noyes and her husband Andy Brown from their latest CD. I am talking to Stan Champion, who is a artist, musician, activist. You know, it's your trip to, it seems, from little I've read about you, Stan, is you took a trip to the Caribbean and your life changed, yes?
Yes, indeed.
How so?
Well, there were some people who asked me to go down to Bob Marley's studio to do some recording, because Bob Marley liked the song that they had written, and I was available to go down there and do that. And once I got to Kingston, Jamaica, because, of course, we went to Kingston, the city. We didn't go to any resorts. We went
exactly.
To the city.
Yeah.
So we got to see life as it really was down there. And number one, I was very fortunate to meet a lot of people down there. Then I learned something about, you know, culture itself, and that the whole movement is about a culture. It's more than just, you know, the hedonistic part of it. There's a history involved, you know, just such as jazz and reggae itself.
And also, that's, I mean, a lot of people think even of hip-hop as it's just this music. There are huge cultural implications involved in all these kinds of music, especially reggae.
Sure.
And you got that. I mean, much of it and much of your activism since, whether it's been on the radio or performing and talking to schools, is about social justice.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing too, Rick, you know, this is a great opportunity to give me to say this, is that I had a problem when I was a child, and it was the arts and music that got me through it,
yeah.
You know, and I had mentors that gave me advice that I actually listened to, and that it helped change my life, so I figured that I can do it for someone else.
Wow, that is such a great mission, because also, Stan Champion, at the time you're doing it, and when you go into schools, especially in some of Chicago's most beleaguered neighborhoods, you know, there are a lot of public schools that have no libraries. They have no books, let alone music or theater or art instruction. Because people think, and you know better than I, that administrators and the people running these places think, oh, well, we can do away with that. Let's test in math, and forget
right.
about the – you got – and I know you believe this, you got really lucky to be exposed to what you were exposed to, and it's made your life. And you
Certainly.
Think of these kids, you know, so you do. You were always in schools and various places spreading that message, aren't you?
And thank God for those teachers that put up with me, you know, and did certain things.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why I give back, because I was a menace,
uh-huh.
you know, but I turned it all around. You know, by seventh grade, but still at the same time, you know, I know people are feeling the same way.
Yeah.
And a lot of musicians are always asking me, well, Stan, what does school pay you? And a lot of times it's not really that, because the school needs something that they really can't afford. So
exactly.
you don't give it to them because they can't pay you. You know, so it's not really that. And you get paid in so many ways, you know, if you're a true believer and if you're a true worker of wonders. And that's part of what it's all about. You know, I'm trying to be part of the healing process. There's a lot of anger, a lot of hate, and a lot of things that we went through when we came up. So it's just as much as that today. So we as elders, Rick, what are we going to do? Just say, oh, that's the way it is and let it go? Or can
well, but
we
you know, Stan, but you also know you're a Chicagoan. You know that there are too many people in this town who do just say, oh, the hell with it, and walk away
sure.
from it. You know?
Totally.
I mean,
that's
a lot of these teachers... A lot of these teachers are buying, you know, pencils and crayons out of their own salaries. And and people ask, ooh, well, why are these neighborhoods so dangerous and why are people shooting each other? Well, because they don't have a chance.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, and they don't have the parents that we used to have. So we have to still engage these young people because actually, Rick, they really want this love and they want this discipline. So we have to kind of be there to engage them and kind of deliver it, because everybody has an opportunity. There's always some kind of hope.
And don't you think, Stan Champion, too, and I will after the first of the year come see you do what you do, that music is a wonderful way to break, you know, when someone usually comes to a classroom to talk to the students, as you well know, I can almost remember being a student, I don't want to hear what they have to say, but music opens a door for these kids.
And I'm glad to have that gift, because it gives me a great, great opportunity to touch, you know, the boundaries that are out there, you know, or the boundlessness.
Yeah.
Because hearts are always open. And that's why I work in the hospitals, too. They call me the human get well card, because sometimes I show up in the hospitals and perform for patients and the families, which I'll be doing at La Arbita Hospital this Thanksgiving for the breakfast. And, you know, things like these are things that bring about joy. And the people, and those are pleasing in his sight. And that's the whole key to my success, by just getting out there and touching people and touching hearts, because people need to be touched no matter where.
Well, and the other thing for you, Stan, is that you get such joy. I can hear it in your voice. You get such joy in talking and playing music. And when you see that joy reflected in the eyes of a kid who has never heard a Bob Marley song, that's the payoff for you, isn't it?
Oh, certainly. And everybody has a story, and I encourage them to write their own little story, even if it's just two bars, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody has one, and then they seek. And, you know, too, Rick, the thing about music that a lot of people don't understand is that music is mathematics.
Sure.
It is history, and it's science. So music is school.
Exactly. This is, I mean, that's one of the things that infuriates me. It is music and art and theater are one of the are wonderful means of teaching what people consider the practical forms of speech and English. You know, you want, you know, okay, Shakespeare doesn't sound like someone on the street corner now, but you learn Shakespeare and you do Shakespeare, you will have a new appreciation of language.
Certainly. And language is all based, like music, is about communication. You know, if you can't communicate to your audience, then you have failed. If you can't communicate to your children, you have failed. If you can't communicate to your parents, you have failed.
And if we can't communicate to each other. Stan Champion, I will be in touch. I want to write about you because that's basically what I really do.
Well,
I like doing the radio, but because it can introduce people to people they wouldn't meet otherwise, but I'm going to introduce you in print, too. So
certainly.
I'll be in touch.
Well, I would appreciate that.
Oh, no, don't be silly. I'll appreciate it. Let me ask you before I let you go. I got 2 minutes left. How you're out there every day. You see this city. Are you able to remain hopeful?
Well, you know, always, because see, I'm a believer in God. I'm a faithful person.
Yeah.
So with that, I'm always going to be hopeful. It's a struggle and there's pain, but that was the whole reason why we were sent down here, to struggle and go through this pain in His behalf. You know, all we have to do is to do the things that are pleasing in His sight. We'll be okay. When we get away from that, then there's going to be problems.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, and children have that in their heart right away. We distort them.
No question.
Into this world, you know, with these untimely things that they have to go through. So that's another thing where you have to sympathize with people. And, hey, and the older people are children, too.
No question. So. No question. Stan Champion, it is an honor to meet you over the radio. And you people out there, before I write the definitive work on him in the Tribune in 2018, go to Roots Rock Society. It's a wonderful website with tons of information about where Stan and his band are going to be playing and other things he does. He is a musician. He is a musician with a message, and I think the message is one of hope for not just kids, for everybody. Stan, it's a pleasure to meet you. Happy Thanksgiving, happy holidays and all that jazz, and I'll see you next year.
Same to you and yours.
My pleasure. Take care. Take good care. What a guy. What an interesting guy. We'll get some commercial breaks, and then we will talk about what it's like to go on a tour of Chicago with one of the great tour leaders in this town. We'll be right back.
John's in love with Joan.
I'll tell you more about these lovely performers, Andy Brown and Petra Van Noyes, later in the show. I cannot remember the first time Amanda Scottiz was on this show talking about her company, Chicago Detours. It must have been shortly after you started it. I can't believe it's 7 years ago.
Yeah.
It must have been shortly
after. 7.5 years, yeah. So it was probably like 2011, maybe, that we first talked.
What was your initial philosophy for starting this? You had been kind of in that business in Italy, and you came back to Chicago. And if my, you know, Alzheimer's addled brain doesn't remember everything, just correct me on that. So far, so good.
Yeah.
And you came here to start this, and there weren't that many tour companies in Chicago at the time. What was your guiding philosophy then?
Well,
and has it changed?
I felt like I was just enamored with Chicago, and I felt like all the tourism that was around was very much, here are the highlights, here's the rich and famous, that the story of the city is just through that lens. The architecture is comprised of dates and names and fancy terminology to make people feel dumb, you know, and I just felt like it wasn't the way that I want to travel. And from having worked with Rick Steves over in Italy, I got so much exposure to different kinds of tour guides, that we would have local guides and different ways that made them really great as far as being storytellers and educators. And sure, we would see highlights kinds of things there, but I just felt like, wow, Chicago has so many stories to tell that nobody's telling. I mean, like, you know, it was just tours of highlights and, you know, hop on a bus and passively be taken around. And I felt like, you know, people who I know want to experience the city on a different level. And, you know, now the internet has changed things so that people are already very informed and they don't need a hop on, hop off bus kind of thing per se. And I just felt like there would be a really a market of people, and I didn't realize it was going to be such a a huge and growing movement in travel, actually.
I also thought, and I'm remembering your philosophy, and when you started this venture, it's called Chicago Detours. And I think we talked about, and tell me I'm wrong again, that the notion of what you were doing would be valuable to someone who lives here.
Yes.
As opposed to the person coming to Chicago and saying, I'm going to have a piece of Eli's cheesecake and a beef sandwich, and that's my experience with
right.
Chicago culinary joys. Wasn't that part of it?
That's the founding kind of tagline is that we bring people to explore stories and places locals don't even know. So the idea that you can live in a city your whole life, but there are just infinite ideas and stories behind the places that we frequent, and kind of, you know, yeah, we kind of wanted to go on that ethos of travel.
Sure.
And also, I think that I did it at this really interesting time in which people were just starting to really want to be travelers in their own cities.
You have also experienced this Rahm Emanuel fueled tourism boom. I mean, tourism has been one of his few successes,
right.
I hazard to say out there. There's been a lot of competition for you, has there not? I mean, I get these fly by night people coming, you know, getting in touch saying, hey, I'm doing tours of like Michigan Avenue. Can you come on your radio show? And I go, no.
Yeah.
No.
Right. Yeah. Come contact me in a year and let's see where you're at, kind of thing. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's tourism is strong. And basically, since I started the company, I've just been trying to keep moving it forward, and we keep growing, and I've got an awesome team of tour guides and employees
on your website.
And so, I mean, yeah, we just keep growing and having new tours.
You also keep these tours relatively limited to number of people. Yes.
Yeah. Most of the tours that we're going to regularly offer to the public are walking tours. So just even logistically, you got to cap it,
sure.
You know? So whether it's like, you know, maybe our historic Chicago walking bar tour, we cap at 14. Our loop interior architecture, we cap at 18. So we too, you know, you're not going to be like people do these, what do you call it? Like pay when you come, or they're free tours and then you're just supposed to pay, and they can't have 50 people or something insane, you know?
How many tours do you have? And I know you will be collaborative with. Were I a businessman who came to Chicago from, Hamburg, Germany, and wanted to see, this is another nice thing about Chicago Detours, as I recall it, that I could call you and say, hey, I am have 3 days off between my business meetings, and I would like to, I think that Chicago has a fascinating movie history.
Mm-hmm.
You would collaborate, perhaps, with this person to give him or her a tour of moviedom.
We can do private custom tours, but we're super busy, so we have to have a lot of heads up to create a new route.
This also has to be a very, very, summer's busy, but this also has to be a very busy time.
Oh, yeah, the holidays. I mean, it's crazy, yeah. But we get all kinds of requests for doing different kinds of custom stuff, but then the truth is we've got like 20 tours that I've designed that are really awesome that go all over Chicago that integrate anything from like jazz and blues, the 1893 World's Fair, Bridgeport bars.
You do a Bridgeport bar tour?
We do a tour that it's called the Big Shoulders Historic Bar and Food Tour.
Must be a tragedy for you that Schaller's is closed.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my
so,
God.
There's been a lot of change around that tour. And that one we do, it's basically all in Bridgeport. And it goes into, like, the meat history. We go down by the stockyards in the old industrial district. But we go into a few neighborhood bars. And then the loss of Johnny O is another really devastating blow to that one. So, yeah, Schaller's closed. So that one, actually, we're kind of...
Yeah, you have to
reinvent it, basically.
Yeah,
but
yeah. You have to rejigger that one a bit.
Yeah, history is changing things all around us.
So is development. And,
yes.
And, you know, one of the things I am a big believer in that, you know, sort of history echoes. But for your purposes, if you don't have some kind of structure or physical piece of history, it's very, very difficult, is it not?
Yes. Yeah, you have to. I mean, that's what I think it's the sort of these, you know, when you go to a museum, you go there because
right.
the object has resonance. And
yes.
same with like telling the stories of the city. You have to see, you see a building and it means more, you know, there could be, you know, a tour, like we were talking about the gangster tour where they show you a parking lot.
Right.
And if you say you see a parking lot, doesn't,
yeah.
you know, mean as much, but you got to have an actual physical building. And I had this whole tour I designed in the Fulton Market, all about the meat packing history.
God. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I totally had to change the entire thing because one of the coolest relics on the whole tour, it doesn't exist anymore. And then now the neighborhood doesn't even have any meatpacking businesses in it
anymore. It's like
now
the chic restaurant
tour. Yeah. So yeah. now I changed the tour. We've got this Fulton Market food tour, and it's really about change in neighborhoods and the rapid, dramatic change of that area.
That's an interesting idea. Do you have a lot of repeat visitors?
Yes, we get people who maybe come to the city like once a year, and they've like made it a tradition now that they'll come on a tour with us, and we get a lot of repeat business with private groups too.
And I know you do the Tribune Tower on some of your tours.
Yeah, our historic Chicago Walking Bar tour starts here.
And that's going to be really interesting after the Tribune Tower has been sold, and then it's going to be redone. And
right.
The doorman at the Tribune condo building will maybe say, no. I know, this is,
wild.
You and I share this kind of, it's not disgust, but it's kind of a
shock. I think other people kind of just go with the flow.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah,
buildings come and buildings go.
Dramatic.
We're going to talk about some very specific things after a short commercial break. I'm here with Amanda Scottese of Chicago Detours. Just go to chicagodetours.com and you can see the faces of all of her other tour leaders. How many are there now? Like five
There's
or
seven
six?
Of us.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. She's the best. Try to get Amanda. I'm sure she's booked up like crazy. We'll be back in, 3 minutes or so.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze.
I'll tell you more about that lovely singer and lovely guitar player later in the show. Amanda Scottese is here from Chicago Detours at chicagodetours.com. This is, as we said before, this is a very busy time of year for you. Are there special holiday tours?
Yes.
Of course there are.
Of course
yes,
there
I'm glad
are.
You asked.
We've got a tour called A Holiday Tour of Drinks, Dailies, and Dead Guys.
Okay.
So it is not your typical holiday lights tour.
No, that doesn't sound like it.
But we talk about, we go through some major Chicago institutions. It's right downtown. We get a Tom and Jerry cocktail at Miller's Pub.
Oh, I love Miller's.
And we go down State Street and kind of talk about what the parade used to be like and the decorations. And we go in Macy's. We get a drink there and talk about some of the traditions there.
Where do
but
you go? Do you go to the Walnut Room to get a drink?
We go there's a pop-up bar.
Right,
yeah.
Right,
so we
right.
can kind of, but actually we sort of do
get
some
in and out.
Wandering through the store and some see some secret views
nice.
Of some cool things. And most of all, there are just, when I kind of set out to do this, I was like, oh, geez, how am I going to make a holiday tour that's not just here's
the,
a Christmas
windows,
tree
yeah,
and
here's a Santa
you know,
Claus, here's a Salvation
right?
Army
And
person.
I ended up uncovering some really cool stories.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And then there's drinks involved. So it's fun. We've got select dates that we're offering it, and we can do it for private
and that's on
groups.
That's on your website. You've got that lovely calendar.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's definitely booking up very quick, too.
And you can give people, you have gift cards on there, too,
yeah,
don't you?
Gift cards are awesome
see,
for
I think
this
that
time
would
of
be,
year.
See, I think that would be a wonderful, wonderful Christmas gift to give to a relative of yours who lives in Chicago.
Yeah.
I really do. You know, someone who is not... You know, maybe someone, a grandfather, grandmotherly kind of age who has not been downtown in a while and who, but have this affection for Chicago. I think they would love that.
Yeah.
So it's a gift card to take a tour.
Right. An experience can be such a cool gift, for sure.
Now, you also have, as you've told me, a grant program and a scholarship program. It's like you're a university now.
Well, yeah. So basically, we have a sort of, we donate half of our tour gratuities to a fund. And so what it is right now is a scholarship, and the deadline's coming up real soon. And then we're shifting the program to be a grant program. We want to support some sort of programming in the city that either it goes under our umbrella of what we want to do, which is things like educate people about architecture, history, could have to do with education, community building. So the grant program, what that means is that we would be donating half the gratuities of our tours to this program. But also we'd be spreading word about it. We want to do it for a whole year. So it'd be sort of fundraising for a local nonprofit. So we're kind of experimenting with this, you know, way of having an outreach that can go beyond what, you know, we're doing with our tours.
That's really nice of you.
What
sparked this? I mean, you're a nice person, but there are a lot of steps between being a nice person and doing something so altruistic with it.
I guess, like, it kind of started, actually, the idea started with me saying I had worked a bit in sort of substitute teaching in alternative schools in Chicago. And I just felt I dealt with a lot of kids who had never really been downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And downtown is such this like seat of power and money and, you know, and it just feels very alienating. And we have this interior architectural tour that I think just creates this whole other perspective. Anyway, so the whole giving program started with this idea that I wanted to get CPS students to be able to experience that tour, to just sort of show them a dimension to the city that is normally not as, you know, open to. So that was kind of where it started. And then I just kind of want to experiment with different ways that we can kind of connect with using the city as a way that we can, you know, learn about things that you're not going to learn about in a classroom, whether that's through distinctly educational programming or,
I don't think the CBS has a lot of problems, but
really,
I don't think, oh yeah, really, because I know teachers who have, I mean, there are no libraries in dozens and dozens of schools, let alone books about Chicago, let alone librarians. And a quick story, I've told it 100 times on this show, that a folk musician named Tom Castle, who sings mostly about the river and the lakes, when he performs in public schools in Chicago in certain disadvantaged neighborhoods, 40% of the kids do not even know, let alone have seen, that Chicago has a river or a lake. And that is one of the most heartbreaking things I have ever heard. And you know, too, that's true. For whatever reason, economics, fearfulness, that they don't even know the city they're living in. And if you're going to do this grant scholarship program to help those kids, help spread that kind of word, I think it's not only a brilliant, but it's a wonderfully altruistic thing to do.
Well, it was a nice idea when I first kind of came up with it, and then it was really hard to spread word about it.
Sure.
You know, all those kinds of things. But I do think that, you know, so the grant program, it could be all kinds of different programs. It doesn't necessarily have to be kids or there's on our website all the parameters for what we're looking for with that. But, you know, it is like we talk about on one of our tours where we do a chronological walk through Chicago history. We actually start just south of the Michigan Avenue Bridge.
Yeah.
It's called our Best Architecture Walking Tour for Design Lovers. But it's like a chronological look at architecture. We end at Maggie Daly Park. And I talk about how that was very controversial because of the amount of money that went into that and how there are parks all over Chicago that could use $1 million, which is a fraction of what that park cost, you know.
Amanda, it's not my place to be proud of you, but you started
you
started Chicago Detours in 2010, moving up slowly but surely to your 10th anniversary, and I greatly admire what you do because
Thank
it you. Is not just the, hey, hi, you're a tourist from, you know, from you know, Bordeaux, and here are eight things to try to remember about Chicago. This is really enlightening even to people who live here.
Yeah.
That's why you people should buy the gift card to give to your grandparents or your parents. It's great to see you again.
It's great to see you, too.
And I'll have to, and come back and let me know. I'll check in with you in a few months and
sounds
see how
good.
This grant program's going out there. It sounds fascinating.
Cool. Thanks so much
Thank
for having
you.
Me.
Again, it is Chicago Detours. I'm not spelling it for you. ChicagoDetours.com. There's a lot of information there. There's the ability to quickly make reservations to go on one of the many tours Amanda and her gang conduct. She is the executive director. You'd be very, very lucky to get her leading a tour. So happy holidays and all that stuff.
Thanks, you too.
My great pleasure.
Come on a tour with me sometime, Rick.
I should. I used to see you sometimes in the lobby talking.
Yeah.
And you'd go, Rick, come over. And I'd go, hi, where are you people from? Which wasn't very enlightening for them. So happy holidays and all that jazz, too. We'll take a little commercial break, and then I'll be back. On the CD. It's a great CD by my great friend Andy Brown. He plays the guitar. And his wife, Petra Van Noyes, who sings. You can go to PetraSings.com to get information about where they play and everything else. And I'll tell you more about them later in the show. But now it's my real treat to have Patty Toomey back on here. The first time you were on with me, Patty, we were talking about the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation. You come always with, and the reason you're here is my longtime friend, and I'm a great admirer of hers, Dot Coyle. When Dot says, hey, Rick, I know someone really interesting, I say, okay, that thank God, you know all interesting people. Patty, you were the president of Josephinum Academy of the Sacred Heart, a place I knew nothing about until doing some research. How long have you been the president there, and how does one become the president of this? And I said it, it's an ancient school. It's as old.
It is. It's Chicago's longest standing girls' school. It was founded in 1890. And isn't it? It's one of Chicago's greatest hidden gems.
No kidding. Kind of a secret hidden gem.
Exactly.
Where is it?
So we're in Wicker Park. We're very close to the intersection of North and Western.
And it's relatively small.
It is. Because we're an international baccalaureate program, we have about 200 students, which makes it perfect for a nice class size.
And all of your graduates wind up going to college?
Correct.
How did you become president of this place?
Well, the last time we were together, we got to talk about Jordan Howard and how his dad passed of pulmonary fibrosis.
Yeah,
and so did my mom, right?
Yeah, sure.
And so, Jordan kept up the fight and still is, and so am I. But after 7 years of heading the organization, I got a phone call, and it was a search firm who said, hey, I know a wonderful, important school that is looking for a head. And my background actually is in education. I just went into healthcare because of the passing of my mother.
Right.
But I thought, okay, well, it's 7 years, and it's time for me to step up and step in. The interview process was right after the tail end of the election. I just thought that it was time to step up and step in. And so I thought, this is a perfect time. So I came after the start of the year.
Did you know much about this place before
Not
you
much
got that
at all.
Phone call?
I knew about the Sacred Heart Network.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Well, the Sacred Heart North Side is just incredibly prominent kind of place. Why has Josephinum been so under the radar? I know it's smaller.
It is. Well, I think one thing is Nat and the Sheridan Road program is fantastic. They're just down the street from Loyola.
Yeah.
Also, my colleague, Meg Steele, who runs Woodlands, the two institutions are institutions. And while we are in longevity, I think the focus was on trying to keep track of a changing neighborhood, shall we say, and making sure the doors could stay open.
Well, at one point in doing research, that you almost, not you, but it almost
it,
closed.
You're absolutely right. It almost closed.
It was sort of on the chopping block until it was.
It was. And so that was around the 80s, around 1985. And we have this wonderful matriarch, Helen Ryan, who helped save the day. And she mobilized so many different people to keep the school open. And she's still very involved, and she's our chair emeritus.
So you went in there to take a look around.
I did.
Obviously,
mm-hmm.
on your interview.
Yes.
What were your first impressions? Because next year, I'm not going to bother you during the holidays. I want to come over and see this
place.
Well,
you have to come over and
see it. Oh, I'm so intrigued.
I mean, and then Dot should chime in, because I think the magic of it is the students. I had two fantastic tour guides, one who wants to be the first Latina mayor of Chicago, and the other wants to run Google. And so I just thought, wow, what two extraordinary young ladies. Then I met a dynamic faculty, young, trained. The board actually is welcoming, and their partners. This was a dream. I thought the same thing. How did I not know about this?
Yeah.
And so I felt like I needed to start telling people, and that's why I told Dad as well. I said, you got to come over.
Right. It is such a cool place. It is, you know, right there in Wicker Park, and the building is really interesting. It's mid-century modern architecture, and I got to go in for a Josephinum experience where they invite people who are interested in the school to kind of shadow a little bit for an hour or two and check out some of the classes. And I was so impressed by the IB program and how the kids learn. There's a great ratio of teacher to student. It's very intimate, and the kids get to participate a lot, and so it's a very active environment to learn in, which is
well, it's in really such an interesting neighborhood. It's near the corner of North and Western. It's at 1501 North Oakley, and that is a lively neighborhood. How many teachers do you have? I'm just trying to get a sense. I'm trying to explore the school without going there.
Right.
No,
and
absolutely.
That's a must. You have to. Well, we have about 40, and we have...
You have about 200 students.
We do. And so I think what Dot was saying is in one day, if you come through a Josephinum experience, I remember one of my tours, we had our history teacher, and she was speaking about the Cold War and were there any analogies to today. We had a science teacher who was talking not just about the periodic table, but how is this going to impact our studies about Chicago's water supply. And then the last group was our fine arts, our theater program. And the students were writing 5 minutes of improv.
Wow. And
they were going to be
incredible.
Performing, right?
Yes. Yeah. They the theater program, they just had the first art night last week at the school.
Right.
So they had a really exciting visual arts show that was a juried show. And then the same night, this theater program where they performed three plays, and the students did everything. They did the writing, they did the costuming, they did the set design. It was just, I can't imagine pulling all that off and still having to go to other classes too, but they did it really very almost like professional job, I would say.
I'm talking. That is the voice of Dorothy Dot Coyle, and in here too is Patty Toomey. Patty is the president of Josephinum Academy in the Wicker Park neighborhood, and we're exploring. It's Josephinum Academy of the Sacred Heart, a sort of hidden gem in Chicago. 200 students, all of whom so far have gone to college when they graduate. And they're from all over. We got to take a commercial break, and I want to figure out how people find the students and their parents find this place. It must be a great deal of word of mouth, unlike, you know, Latin school and British school and all these other joints that can advertise considerable advertising budgets. I can't imagine you have much advertising budget, do you?
No, we don't.
And the purpose of this show is not to get you. I mean, if we were doing it now, we'd be doing it when you can apply. We wouldn't be doing it around the time everybody's breaking. I'll tell you this, and then we'll get a couple commercials, and these nice women are staying all the way till about 1:45.
I'll
tell you more about the guitar player and the singer later in the show. I'm sitting here with Dot Coyle and Patty Toomey. Patty has a real job. She's the president of the Josephinum Academy of the Sacred Heart, a fascinating, increasingly fascinating place to me. It is the oldest
Longest standing.
All girls school. At one point, when Josephinum started, there must have been a number of all girls schools. I have to think that that number has diminished over the last decades, has it not?
Unfortunately, it has.
Why do you say unfortunately?
Well,
because I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that.
Now that I'm a part of this really wonderful environment with 200 young ladies, I just feel like they tell me that there's this sisterhood. And for us, there's not as much drama between the students. They're focused on being together and learning.
Yeah.
And what a great environment to be able to do that. And I just find it unfortunate that other schools, probably like us, ended up having to close.
Yeah, maybe they did it. Maybe it was an economic thing, too. Maybe, I don't think it was a psychosexual kind of thing, but I think it was probably just purely economics. But I like that idea. There's still some all-boys schools around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these days people think, oh, that's weird that they should. But it removes for the young ladies certain inherent distractions.
Right.
They wear uniforms at Josephinum.
Mm-hmm.
Do any of them bridle at that? Or they want to, you know, it's a tough thing. Parents are the ones who go in and say, yes, we'd like to apply here.
Right.
Do you find the kids enthusiastic, especially you've been there 1 year, but the freshmen as enthusiastic as the seniors who have lived through the entire experience? Or there's got to be a learning curve.
There is. And they do have things such as spirit day. So they get to relax or dress down a little bit. But it is interesting. When I go to a lot of the open houses or the high school fairs, a lot of the students do ask about the uniforms. And then I have to pull out the picture, and it's a beautiful purple, and wear it proudly. So the students do ask, but they don't seem too bothered by it, which was actually a surprise to me since I do have two middle school girls. So I thought for sure they'd be like, no way, uniform, I'm out. But they're really open to, especially when they know it's Spirit Day, too.
And don't you think, I hate to bring it up, but we're living in a very, very interesting age as of, you know, Harvey Weinstein, 3 weeks ago. It has changed almost immediately changed the culture, the relationship between men and women. I don't care if powerful men and powerful women. One of the things I appreciate about this all-girls institution is they can be empowered without necessarily having to deal with any powerful, you know, I became the vice president of the school because Billy was voted president.
Or, right.
You know what I mean? And I think that probably all of your teachers have been having to address this in some kind of way, yes?
Yes, and I think the way that our faculty and our tremendous staff decide to look at it is we can empower the students, we can empower these young women without making others bad.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key, and that's the way that we choose to approach it, and we have open conversation and directed conversation so that they know that, you know, it's an issue, we're on top of it, and we're listening. It's part of their lives and our lives.
Yeah. And they'll be better off for that as young women and young women in the business world. Where do all of these kids come from, Patty Toomey?
Well, it's interesting.
How do they find you?
We have 43 different zip codes.
Really?
Yes. Yes, the students come from 43 different zip codes. And it's interesting because transportation then, it's a commitment to come.
Oh, yeah.
Right, absolutely. And so what we do is I have a tremendous team that hits the ground running. We hit every open house that we possibly can. We host them. We use social media. We partner with great organizations such as Big Shoulders, who just had an open house this weekend. So we are at a bit of a disadvantage because we don't have a heavy marketing budget or advertising budget. So we do rely on word of mouth and reputation and good old-fashioned testimonials.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you want to add something?
Yeah, no, I think it really does. It's such a diverse school. It's such a great asset to the city.
Well, that's a lot of zip codes for 200.
Right,
that's a lot of zip codes for 200 girls.
Right.
What's the cost? What's the tuition?
It's just under $9,000, and
which in this day and age is a bargain.
Well, the other thing that we do is we want to make it affordable. And so we do offer the Future Leader Scholarship Program, which will make it affordable for families. So let's say the average of what the family would pay is about $3,000.
Oh, my God.
Right. And wow. It's merit and it's aid.
Wow.
Right.
What, when you were going through the process of being interviewed by the board, I'm assuming.
I had six different rounds of people that I met with, which really showed me how much they cared and how important this was.
Were you more and more intrigued as you went through this process?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And each interview was different. And I had a chance to meet with, like I said, the board. But the very pivotal one was we have student ambassadors.
Yeah.
And what
you met the future mayor of Chicago.
I did.
And the future head of Google.
Right.
Now, that'll pay off for you.
Right.
In
exactly.
Both ways.
Well, it was interesting because they asked me, they said, so what would you do to make this school better?
Wow.
And so I twisted and I said, what would you do? And so they thought that was, wow, she really cares and she wants to listen, you know, to what we want to see happen, and which is true.
When you decided to do this, you did so, I'm assuming, with the understanding of what a serious commitment this is. You're not a naive person,
no,
Patty Toomey.
No, I'm not. And I took it. It's a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
And every day that I go there, I just I'm blessed because my office is in the library where all the kids love to hang out. It's more like a commons area. And so I get to be with them. I'll be in meetings because I have glass windows too, and they'll be waving to me and their big smiling faces.
It
fulfills me. It's not just me helping them, but it's them helping me, which is a gift.
Well, you two, Dot Coyle and Patty Toomey, stay here after the news, and we'll talk some more about this and about the future of it, about the future of a small, sort of not independent, but small. I have to ask, too, like how much religion you teach there, because I know nothing about Catholic schools. So stay through the news. We got to take a commercial break, then we'll get some news, and I will continue on with Patty Toomey and Dot Coyle talking about Josephinum Academy. I'm not going to spell it for you. Josephinum.org. You can get all the information you want. We'll be right back. That is Andy Brown and Petra Van Noyes, they have two new fans in Patty Toomey and Dot Coyle. Patty's the president of Josephinum Academy of the Sacred Heart, and Dot is a friend of Patty's and a friend of mine, and one of Chicago's great citizens for a variety of different reasons. We've got a few more minutes with Patty. I'm going to write about this school, too, because I'm fascinated with it. It's an all-girls Catholic school. How much Catholicism is at the school? I don't even, you know, I know my great friend Ty Bowler, who I grew up with, who went to Immaculate Conception when it was on North Park, used to just come home every day from Immaculate Conception, tell me all these scary stories about nuns that hit his hand with a ruler, and I thought it was like the worst thing. What element for a school of the Sacred Heart, what is the Catholic shadow in the classroom, for instance?
Got it. Well, first of all, I have not been scared from any nun that we've had, so that's the good news. We were actually formed back in 1890 by the Sisters of Christian Charity, and they are so kind to have us. It's their building, and so they let us be a part of that special community in Hickory Park, and they never left. They've committed to that community, and they've committed to Josephinum. So we've been partners for 127 years.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
And it is amazing. And then we realized that we needed a little broader partnership, too. So we were very fortunate to be a part of the Sacred Heart Network as of 2011. And so they have the five goals and criteria, which is really we have to support each other. And we are just moving into the bicentennial of St. Philippine, who founded the network.
Okay.
And actually, our year of prayer starts tomorrow.
Okay.
So everybody will be coming to Mass, but not everybody is Catholic.
Right.
And so we just ask our students to be respectful.
Oh, that's awesome.
Right.
Okay.
So if you're not Catholic.
It's not much of a burden.
Right. Yeah. If you're not Catholic or you're not practicing, we still welcome you. Just be respectful, and that's all we ask, no matter what religion or belief or not.
That's easy. Even I could have handled something like that. Patty, how do you see, you've only been there 1 year, and you obviously are passionate about the place and the 200 students. What are your, I hate, I'm not even going to ask, okay, like, what's your five-year plan? what do you see for the high school?
Well, I love the fact that we are a hidden gem, but I really want everybody to know about us because I think it's these partnerships that are going to help our students.
Sure.
And then help us live on. And one of the key partnerships that we have right now is with the Chicago Cubs and Big Shoulders. They are helping us renovate our softball field and our playing field. We know that green space is at a premium, right, in Chicago.
No kidding.
And how fortunate who have these fantastic partners, where not only can we support the students in the classroom, but now outside through these academic programs and now sports programs. I think that's going to be really key. We're hoping to have that ready by the fall latest of next year, if not the spring, if the grass grows well.
Do you have teams that compete?
We do. We're the Cougars, and we have basketball right now. We just finished up great volleyball. We have softball. We have soccer.
And you play in what league? Who do you play against, for instance?
Well, it depends on the league.
Yeah.
But we do play some of the other local Catholic schools. So we're on buses. We have buses, too.
Yeah.
And if sports isn't for you, as Dot had said, we have this fabulous fine arts program. And I know that's a passion of mine.
It's actually kind of amazing to me that you have all this going on for a student body of 200 people.
Well, you would not believe how many clubs that we have. I mean, if you are interested, let's say the three of us were interested in starting a club and we had a faculty or a staff sponsor, we'd start the club. And it could be baking. It could be cheerleading.
Math club.
Exactly.
Model UN. Right. There are at least a dozen clubs that I've seen.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's amazing, isn't it? At the beginning of the
really
school
is.
Year, we have all the faculty and staff sponsors come up in the gym and they get to pitch their program. And so the students get to hear, and cheerleading actually got the biggest.
Is that right?
Yeah, cheerleading of all things. But, you know, we have a wonderful math teacher who teaches guitar and he does skateboarding. So he was a hit. So I just have to say, like, the innovation and the creativity just is so palpable. You can feel it.
Wow. Are you still involved? I know you're not heading it, but the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation, you're still a part of that.
You know, and it's so interesting that you ask, because in my role here heading an education organization, I'm still very much involved with health and public health. There's so much intersections between the two.
Sure.
And so I volunteer for Resurrection University or Present St. Mary and Elizabeth. I will always support the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation.
Will Jordan Howard, too.
Yes.
I mean, that guy, talking about a quiet success story.
Right.
You know, Jordan Howard just seems to have a normal personality because he is a great football player. He had a great game today.
Yeah. He did. Another great one. And can I say that the person who really helps him is his mother.
I know. I remember when he was on the show.
Extraordinary. And the thing about Flora is she loves Jordan with all her heart, but she also gives back, and I'm hoping at one point, you know, she might be able to help our students, because that's what she does professionally.
Yeah.
And they see themselves as Chicago citizens, too.
Yeah, no kidding. I sensed that from him the first time you guys introduced me to him.
Happy that he's in Chicago.
Would it be interesting to have one day Jordan Howard come visit? I wonder if these 200 girls would even know who he is.
Oh, my gosh. They sure would. And he might come visit. Hopefully, his mother will come. We've had other people come, like Tamika Catchings.
Sure.
Who is the famous Olympian. She's come and held a basketball clinic.
She had a great basketball clinic over the summer. A free basketball clinic. So kids got to come to Josephinum, play basketball with this amazing WNBA and Olympic.
Well, I just think these are such interesting times for the youth of America, you know, confronted by the news that they undoubtedly hear on television all the time. And it is the young women in your school are going to be in their professional lives on a completely different kind of footing than women have had to be for the last few centuries.
Right.
Yeah, the rules have changed. I mean, they are, you know,
and every day they're changing.
Yeah. And I really think that IB program and just thinking, you know, looking at how you think and thinking critically and teaching them to look at these global issues, you know, they're getting a great education.
Oh, it's fantastic. Patty, you made the right choice, I think.
I really sense
your passion and enthusiasm for this new job that you've had for not even a year, right?
Right.
Not even a year. We'll have to celebrate. I'll come out. I got to come out.
Yes, you're coming.
I got to come out and see this place. It just sounds...
Tim Samuelson loved it.
It sounds utopian in some ways. I mean, I know that...
Well, we all have our days and our moments.
Yeah,
right?
I know. And all kids and being a teenager ain't easy. But it sounds... It's a story that needs to be told. The Josephinum Academy of the Sacred Heart in the heart of Wicker Park, 1501 North Oakley. You can get all sorts of information and read the detailed history of this place about when it almost closed. It was on death's door.
It was.
For a little while, and then it was saved. Go to Josephinum. It's really easy. Josephinum.org for all the information. Then pick up your Tribune sometime in 2018 and see what it's like for Rick to go there. I almost got kicked out of the American Girl store right after it opened.
Oh, no.
So I'm hoping maybe I'll have a guard.
Don't worry, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
You'll get a warm welcome.
Happy Thanksgiving, ladies.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Happy New Year. Oh, my God, it's a great story. It's a great story. And say hello to Mr. Howard for me when you talk to him.
He's
quite a football player. We'll talk about an upcoming show at the Skokie Theater after a short commercial break. I don't think I have to read you any more ads about doing something other than listening to this show. So just stay tuned for a few minutes. Welcome back. We have a few more minutes on the show and time to tell you about something very exciting, I think. Daryl Nitz, who is one of the great impresarios in this area, sent me a note saying, Rick, you know, I realize that he's done a lot of shows and we've talked about them on the air, and he often does these shows paying tribute to singers and entertainers after they have died. Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra. You know what you've done, Daryl? Now you are going to celebrate living legends. Was that really a revelation to you? Did you realize that? Because I don't think I realized that most of the people you were honoring in song had vanished.
I was working on a song with Dapper Davenport's where I work.
Yeah.
And I came across... it's called Bring Me Sunshine. I came across that Brenda Lee and Willie Nelson were like the only two people who had recorded this song. And, you know, Brenda Lee, I don't hear much about her. And
right.
I started looking her up more and saw that she was still alive. And then, of course, I'm like, and Willie Nelson, who I love his music. And I started just getting kind of obsessive about a list. I started with people in their 70s and just kept, you know, going up. And now in our show, we are starting it at 75. People who are 75, like Aretha Franklin and Barbara Streisand, and working our way up to...
Paul Anka, Paul Simon, Helen Reddy, Dionne Warwick. I mean, the list you sent me, and I got to tell you, it sort of surprised me. You sent me a list of 75 people who are still alive and kicking. Let me just say that the show, it's called Living Legends. It's going to be Saturday at the Skokie Theater. You can go to skokietheater.org to easily buy tickets. You must have, Daryl, we know each other pretty well. You must have been stunned at how many were on this list as well, weren't you?
Yeah, no, I really was. I mean, you take, for example, somebody like Connie Francis.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, wow, and she's still alive. And then you look up, and you might even find that, like, for example, Johnny Mathis is coming to town. In fact, I'm going to go see him.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks from now, you know. So a lot of these people are still performing. And what I did with my cast was I let them look at the list, and then they choose what they're drawn to, you know.
That.
So...
Well, it certainly gives them. Yeah, it gives. Well, and a plus, you know, the thing that the fact that some of these people are still out there and performing, it allows your performers to use. You know, it's not they don't have to dust anything off. You know, they can right. use and interpret sort of a contemporary artist. That must be a joy for them too. You've got. You know, you talk about some of the people you've got, Esther Hannah and Lynn Jordan and Frida Lee, and you yeah, are going to be there, and Johnny and then, Rogers.
Johnny, yeah. And then I've got, there's two young guys. One's Antonio Duca. He was featured in, now I can't think of the name.
Don't worry.
Right now. But he's an up-and-coming singer, you know, here in town working Empire. He was on Empire.
Oh, okay.
And he went to Glenbrook South, which, you know, is fascinating listening to you talk about, you know, the schools and stuff right before this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a school teacher.
I know.
And I also work in Wicker Park, you know, so it's kind of cool hearing about this story. But Antonio goes to Glenbrook, went to Glenbrook South. He graduated last year. And then Tom Olico, actually, I taught him. When he was in
sixth grade.
And Tom is at DePaul now and a great singer. And he would send me like recordings when he was in high school of like him doing Johnny Mathis Christmas tracks. Like he would record with his music director at school. So Tom's getting to do Johnny Mathis. And Antonio, you know, he's like, you know, one of the people that I really admires Charles Aznavour. Well, I'm putting this list together, and who do I see but Charles Aznavour?
So, like, and you know, he's 93 years old.
Yeah,
I think that's
going to be.
Well, the great thing is, Daryl, and it opens up your cast of characters to a lot of new and actually, I'm kind of 91. If they're alive, they're fresh. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now,
Antonio, who's like 19, you know, 18, 19, just out of high school, just started in college, for him to be able to pay tribute to somebody like this, you know, that's been someone that he admires. I enjoy putting things like that together. Do you know what I mean?
I just think, like, now this thing sounds, that's the reason you're on now. It sounds so exciting. It is called Living Legends, and it will feature Antonio Duca, Jennifer French, Esther Hanna, Lynn Jordan, Frida Lee, LaShera Moore, Daryl Nitz himself, Johnny Rogers. The band will include Jim Cox on bass and Phil Grateau on drums. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen those two. It's at the Skokie
awesome.
Theater. How long will the show be? How many numbers do you think will be involved?
Well, actually, I should mention real quickly, Andrew Blenderman is our musical director.
Uh-huh.
He'll be singing as well. Everybody has about 12, 15 minutes.
Wow.
And in that time, they're paying tribute to five or six. Sometimes it's a medley. Like, for example, I came up with for Tom that Bobby Vinton and Steve Lawrence and Johnny Mathis are all 82 years old.
So you're going to do it.
You're kind of an 82 medley. and we're posting the pictures of the kind of getting the audience to guess along with us. You know, we might start the song.
Sure.
And then show their picture and then show their birthday and how old they
Daryl,
are. That kind of
I got to tell you, Daryl Nitz, this is not the first one of these shows you're going to do. I think it's a great idea. The show is called Living Legends, Saturday night at the Skokie Theater. Go to SkokieTheater.org. It is a variety of Chicago's best performers doing homage to living, the emphasis, legends.
Right.
And you will not believe how many of these people who you loved when you were young are still alive. Daryl, you're a genius. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, thank you, sir.
You're really a genius. Go to SkokieTheater.org. And stay tuned for a couple commercials, and I will say good night to you. Well, thank you so much for listening. It was a full show. I think we may have one more before the end of the year. I know we're not on Christmas Eve. We're not on New Year's Eve. So you'll have to do without. You can find something to do. Aubrey Mumpower, thanks for engineering. Lise Graham, thanks for producing. Carl Amari's coming up. I'll be filling in for Bill and Wendy this Wednesday from 10 to noon with Mary Wisniewski, talking about her Nelson Algren book, and Bob Mamet, the younger brother of playwright David Mamet, playing some jazz. So tune in if you're off the day before Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.